five U.S. service members who were killed when their plane crashed into the Mediterranean Sea during a routine training mission. Hamas says it has halted hostage negotiations because of Israel's attacks on a Gaza hospital. Dr. Christos Christou with Doctors Without Borders also criticized the attacks on CBS's Face the Nation.
We have to protect the hospitals. Any attack in the medical care at the moment is an attack in humanity.
CBS's Deborah Pata is in East Jerusalem.
The Israeli military says it's now opened an evacuation route from the Al-Shifa hospital, but for many of the patients there in a critical condition, this is simply not possible.
The U.S. is still working to free Americans in Gaza. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
I'm not going to get into the specifics of what's on the table, only to say that we are actively working to ensure the safe return of every American being held hostage and every other person being held hostage by Hamas.
House Republicans have a proposal to avert a government shutdown Friday.
Speaker Mike Johnson released a two-step CR, or continuing resolution, that would extend funding through January 19th and again February 2nd. It would be contingent on passing certain long-term appropriations bills by then. The package does not include funding for Israel, Ukraine, or the border. Johnson said it's a necessary bill to allow Republicans to fight for conservative priorities. House Democrats are still reviewing the measure, but the White House called it an unserious proposal. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Washington.
President Biden is scheduled to meet with Chinese leader Xi Jinping on Wednesday in San Francisco. Residents there are already preparing, as KPIX TV's Da Lin reports.
I'm already having difficulties getting around because of the gates spinning up.
Alexandra Alvear lives in one of the several senior housing complexes across from Moscone Center.
I don't think I'll be able to go out, really. I've been stocking up on my, household supplies and whatnot.
Like Alexandra, many seniors tell me they've rescheduled doctor's appointments and are preparing the week like a pandemic lockdown.
This year's hurricane season is coming to an end.
There are just under 3 weeks left in the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season. The National Hurricane Center says it's watching a system in the Southwest Caribbean that has about a 20% chance to develop into something stronger, perhaps a tropical system. There have been 20 named storms this year. Only two names remain on the list, Vince and Wilma. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A Wisconsin grand jury has indicted a Connecticut man accused of scamming older Wisconsinites. Consumer watchdogs have some tips to avoid being ripped off. Here's Mike Moan.
Matthew Ramos Soto of Hartford is accused of stealing $200,000 from Wisconsin seniors last year. The scam was to call the victims, falsely claim to be representing one of their younger relatives who had been arrested, and that bail money was needed. The Better Business Bureau's Kristen Johnson says disengaging right away can help people avoid this kind of scam.
Put down the phone, hang it up, and call your grandchild. Do not call the number on your caller ID, because scammers can spoof caller IDs. They can spoof names and numbers. Actually call that grandchild and say, did you really just call me? Are you really in trouble?
Other ways people can remain vigilant are to ask questions of the scammer that only a family member can answer, and to not wire money if there is any doubt about the call. Johnson urges anyone who's been a victim to report it on the Better Business Bureau scam tracker. Ramos Soto faces a maximum penalty of 20 years in federal prison if convicted. Though older adults are some of the more likely targets for scams like this, they're not the most susceptible to them, with experts pointing to vulnerability among those ages 18 to 24. Still, Johnson notes there are big concerns about the impact on older populations.
So while older adults were less likely to fall for scams when targeted, when they did fall for them, they lost a lot more money than someone ages 18 to 24.
Around 74% of adults age 55 and older are susceptible. In 2022, this population lost around $350 on average per scam. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Clear skies tonight with a low of 34. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies tomorrow, 57. Tomorrow night, lows around 31. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 54 degrees.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw.
540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Hello, everyone. I'm Lou Ann Bird from Bird on a Wire, our podcast series that is co-hosted with Civic Media. We are having conversations about hope, civility, and action, and trying to encourage more people to get involved in the political process and to make it more civil just in general. So tonight I have the honor of highlighting something very near and dear to my heart, and that is the military, the veterans. I want to mention I'm here with my husband Phil and his brother John and his brother Joe. We also have in the audience their sister Maggie and more relatives and friends here. So thank you all for coming. Thank you guys for agreeing to do this. I will start with just a tiny little story about when Phil and I got married almost 40 years ago. His mom gave me a series of letters that he had written home from Vietnam. And he said, you need to read these. And then she gave me a pamphlet on post-traumatic stress. And she said, when Phil came home, he was a different guy than when he went there. So those letters sat in a box for a long time, and I did read them. And then occasionally would pull them out and reference them for different things, military events, whatever. And then about 5 years ago, I delved deeply into those letters. They were getting old and crinkly, and I scanned them all in, read them all, scanned each one in to preserve them, and really studied your story, honey, right? And our grandson wanted to know more, right? Isn't that how it got started? Do you remember that?
Ryan asked, the oldest grandson, he asked, asked a more question about Vietnam and everything.
And it was right after you went on the honor flight.
Yeah.
And we had pulled the letters out for that. So I learned in depth about Phil's story, and it's something all of these guys learn more. It made me curious. So I thought we would start off with, tell us where you served, when you served, and you know, tell us a little bit about that. What your job was in the military. Who wants to start here?
Well, I was one of the lucky ones to be drafted in 1965, and we went to Fort Devens in Boston for training, and that base hadn't been used since World War II, so our basic training was a lot easier. We didn't have the hardcore drill instructors, so we had a fairly easy boot camp. And my job was, I was a gunner on a 106 recoilless rifle. It's a big howitzer mounted on a Jeep. And we called it hell at both ends because what came out the front was just as bad as the backlash. That made the thing recoilless. But We shipped out for Vietnam from Boston on a troop ship, a World War II troop ship, a real tub, and went down the Atlantic through the canal, stopped in Long Beach for 2 days, and then to Nam. And we caught the tail end of a typhoon up near Guam, and that was pretty bad. Seashells and guys in a ship and all racing for the head. And then in country, we did a lot of bunker duty, patrols, and that sort of thing. Three major operations we went out on. So luckily, nothing happened.
Well, tell us about how you ended up getting out.
Oh, I got out.
You got shot.
Well, that ain't the reason I got out, though.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm learning something new. It
was near the end of my tour, and my tour ended, actually. And they gave it early out if you were, I think, 60 or 90 days from your date of discharge. So I got home about 90 days early, which is good.
Okay. Joe, were you in at the same time as Phil? No, you were in much later.
I was drafted in 1970. And wound up in Vietnam somehow. I went through basic training at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. AIT at Fort Leonard Wood. Finance school at Fort Benjamin Harrison. Jungle training at Fort Riley, Kansas. Then off to Vietnam by airplane. Landed in Cameron Bay, found out I was assigned to the 1st Cavalry Division, and I stayed there the whole time I was in Vietnam. My job was to take care of battalion's finance records and fly out to the front once in a while. That's about it.
But you delivered... was it paychecks or money?
Yeah.
You took care of the whole financing.
I had a worked for an officer.
Right. And so you would fly in there.
Yeah.
How many flights did you do? I think you know, right?
I don't. I know it was over. I have the records of the first 3 months I was there. Three or 4 months, it was over 40.
Okay.
But then after that, I don't know.
A lot of flying.
Lost a... track of the, they lost track of the records, I guess.
That was dangerous business being in a helicopter. That was one of the prime dark targets.
Yeah, they'd like to take a pot shot once in a while.
Well, I'm glad you all made it. Okay, John, tell us about your military service. You had a different experience.
I was in college at St. Norbert's. It was my second year. Didn't have any money. Our father tried to get us out of the barn for a year. He gave us our first year of college tuition, so our first year was paid. And
for you.
For you, yeah. Second year, I didn't have any money. It was like I actually sold beer at Lambeau Field, lugged cases of beer up, but then I got sick and tired of school, not having any money, and so I just went downtown and enlisted in the Navy. Took a train to Milwaukee, went through the pre-induction physical and a train to Great Lakes and boot camp.
What year was that?
This is 1961. I enlisted in November of 1961, and about 3 weeks into boot camp, I started losing strength, coming down with something, and I I was the guide on for the second platoon of my company, and so we took off for chow one morning, and we'd gone 100 yards, and my platoon was 50 yards behind because I could hardly walk anymore, and I bailed out to sick bay, spent the whole day trying to convince numbnuts that I wasn't trying to get out of the service, which was their classic, you go in and you tell them, well, I got tingling in my hands and feet, and can't button my buttons anymore, and can't hardly walk. Well, a couple of aspirin threw me out, fell down, and I didn't have any reflexes anymore. The disease I had takes away your reflexes. Fell down, smashed my head in the concrete, and broke my nose. So then, of course, well, then they get excited and want to get you x-ray and going. So that whole day was taken up with getting help. A couple of people always helping me get, because I could hardly walk anymore, get back to the aid station or the sick bay. The guy who threw me out had his back turned, and the doctor's office was open, and the two young kids who were holding me up, I said, take me into the doctor's office, and he said he was really pissed because it was 5 o'clock and he wanted to go home. And I blurted out some symptoms, and he said, hold out your hands and close your eyes, and I fell flat on his face, right across his desk. And then they got excited because they thought I had spinal meningitis, which in kind of, it's contagious. So
very.
Yeah, very. And so I'm in the off to the hospital. It ended up, I was paralyzed from the neck down. The paralysis stopped the night they were going to give me a tracheotomy. They had the kit beside my bed. But it's an ascending paralysis starts, it was called Guillain-Barré syndrome. It starts in your fingers and toes, works up your body. And when it gets to your brain, it kills you. So it stopped before that happened. Nine months later, Navy doesn't want me anymore, and put me on an ambulance and sent me up to the Milwaukee VA. So I entered the VA system September of 1962 in Milwaukee. I've been in the system that long. All in all, I think the VA system has treated me very well. One of the things is that I'm a clean vet. I don't have any drug issues. I don't have any disciplinary issues coming in, and there's no question about my disability as far as when it happened and who's responsible. So I've never had an issue with my disability. In fact, every time I've done something, I had my disability raised or my adjusted. I was in college at Oshkosh, and one of my roommates was this guy back from Vietnam. Another roommate was this guy.
That would be Phil and Joe.
On his way to Vietnam. Well, he wasn't on his way to Vietnam then, but he was. It was interesting. There were three vets and one non-vet, and all of us were sucking up GI money as far as school, and poor Joe had to go to work. But anyway, I could tell you about PTSD. We were watching the TV one night, in 1969. And the war, I don't know if you ever saw any TV about that. It was live and in living color. And, we're on the couch, and somebody on the TV hollered, "Incoming." And never saw somebody move so fast in all my life.
Tell us, describe that for our listeners. What happened?
Phil was on the floor trying to dig a hole in the, in the cover.
PTSD, yeah.
It was a quick thing, back up, nothing, that was it. But could tell somebody about that. Interesting, my hospital stay, military hospitals are fairly segmented. Great Lakes Naval Hospital was 8 stories. All the wards were broken legs on one ward, broken bones, different injuries, different illnesses, different things. What do you do with this guy? Rare neurological disease. So in their infinite wisdom, they put me on the open psych ward. The wards were big. This is like, I'm trying to envision how many. It was probably, Maggie, you were there, weren't you?
I always think it was 100.
It was 100, but it was probably 50.
Yeah.
I think it probably 50 beds, two rows. And I'm the right next to the, and then I was the only non-mental patient. Well, I don't know if I was mental or not. And then in a room there was a man in a room, and I sort of asked about him, and his name was Ted, and he was a Korean. He was had a drug overdose in Korea, and he came back. He was paralyzed, and so they moved him out next to me, and we started visiting, and he was Greek. And his parents lived in Gary, Indiana, his family, and they would bring Greek food and play Greek music, and of course they fed me. So one of the things, but anyway, that's.
So you were in there a long time, right?
I was in Great Lakes Naval Hospital for 9 months, and I was in Milwaukee VA for 4 more. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to let me out. And I decided I was going to be an unruly patient, and they discharged me, and I went home.
What kind of shape were you when you went home?
Pretty weak yet.
Yeah?
I sat a lot in the lounge chair, and Mom was raising foster babies at the time. She'd throw a baby in my lap, and I'd sit there and hold the baby.
Tell us a little about your family, long as you're on that subject. How many siblings?
And... Oh, there were 8.
There's 8.
I'm number 2. My older brother Mike would refer to me as pretender to the throne. Then there's Steve, who we're missing. Steve died about, 5 years ago?
10 years ago.
Ten? Wow, a long time ago. Then Phil, then Joe, and then the first gal, Maggie. And Grandma Bird wrote in a letter to Maggie, said, "Maybe the luck in the barn will change," because there were 5 boys first on a farm, and bull calves are worthless. And so, and then Madonna, Eli's mother.
We have Eli in the audience.
And then and Elizabeth, we lost to breast cancer.
Mike served?
Mike was
ROTC
for 4 years at St. Norbert's, and then between his junior and senior year, he was on active duty in the Army, and he served 20 days active duty, and they discovered a heart murmur, and so they didn't want him as a regular arm, but then he served in the reserves for a while. I don't know how long, but I think you can read about it in the book. I think it says something in the book, how long it was.
Yeah, we've got a book here that I put together with all the information. And then Steve served?
Steve was regular Army. He enlisted. I think he went up to Oshkosh, but I don't think he ever went to a class. and then he enlisted in the Army. He was regular Army, 101st Airborne. He was crazy, jumped out of planes all the time. Good ones. When his unit rotated to Vietnam, this is early 60s. He was almost on the plane, as I recall. And they found out he was short time, which meant at the time in early Vietnam, you had to have a year in grade left because he was regular Army. They didn't send him to Vietnam. But he did do a combat jump into Santo Domingo. And I think he drove generals around. I think it was a pretty good duty. We have a new person in the audience, and this is my grandson, Corey. Hi, Corey.
Hey, welcome, Corey.
Love you.
So all five of you served at different times. Now, Mike was first. He enlisted. You enlisted.
Yep. Steve enlisted.
You were drafted.
No, Steve enlisted. And
Steve enlisted.
Phil and Joe
and
were drafted.
Drafted. And Phil did not have a number, right?
No.
You were drafted and you served 65 to 67, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I was number 64.
So you knew, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of our listeners might not know what that is. What's the draft?
The draft. You don't know what the draft is?
Well, some might not realize.
I'll speak for my age group. Yeah. You have to explain this for some of our listeners.
Yeah. Well, they pick you out and they say you're going in the service.
They don't know,
but the numbers, the lottery.
The lottery is was you, they drew your name out of a hat or your number, birthday out of a hat.
The birthday.
And whatever number that came up in their system that they had, that was your number.
Low number was not good.
I was 64. Jerry Kramer.
So you had to go.
Had to go.
Had no choice. And nope. Phil, back in that day, everybody went.
They didn't have a number system that when I went in. That was the big buildup of the war. That's when Lyndon Johnson really heated things up over there, so they needed guys. So they drafted quite a few people at that time.
Tail end of my service was late 71, and they were already shipping people home.
Near the end.
Yes, near the end.
One thing about Joe enlisted, enlisted the first, the day one of our cousins was killed in Vietnam, didn't necessarily know he was there, but it was the same day.
Well, one of the important things to our listening audience is if you have veterans in your family, try to get them to tell their story, because you served, you sacrificed. And the thing I discovered reading through Phil's letters was all the family connections, right? All the weddings that you miss and the funerals, and that's all described. Yep, Maggie, he couldn't make it to Maggie's, you know.
Okay.
What that experience was like. So there's a lot of sacrifice involved here for both the families, right? I can't imagine what your mom went through with each one of you, you know, especially in Vietnam toward the end. Do you remember her reaction to all of that? Well, tell us your mom's role in all of this. I know there is one.
Bird on a Wire podcast will be right back after this. To listen to this and more uninterrupted, listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Hamas has cut off hostage negotiations, citing Israeli attacks on Gaza hospitals. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on CBS's Face the Nation.
The United States does not want to see firefights in hospitals where innocent people, patients receiving medical care, are caught in the crossfire. And we've had active consultations with the Israeli Defense Forces on this.
A Republican two-part temporary funding plan to avert a government shutdown does not include funding for Ukraine or Israel. Republican Texas Congressman Mike McCall.
The world is on fire from where I sit. It is too urgent. We can't sit back and do nothing.
There are evacuations in Iceland because a volcano may erupt. Journalist Alda Sigmundsdóttir.
We are just currently waiting for the eruption to start. It's highly unlikely that there will not be an eruption. The most likely scenario is that the eruption will happen at any time.
CBS News Brief, I'm Wendy Gillette.
Discover the secret to a healthier you at Lake County Botanics. Vape Walkie specializes in top quality hemp products from CBD to Delta 8, all curated just for you. You'll find Delta 8, Delta 10, THCA, and more legal hemp compounds in disposable vapes, cartridges, edibles, and more. Isolates, broad spectrum, or full spectrum CBD, they've got it all. They even have products for your furry friend. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 to 7, and Sundays from 11 to 5. Mention this ad to get a free gummy at 215 Oakton Avenue, Suite C in Pewaukee, Lake County Botanics.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In the NBA, the Bucks have a road game Wednesday night against the Raptors. Tomorrow night, the Bucks host the Chicago Bulls. It was a wild week for Giannis Antetokounmpo. On Wednesday, he got ejected from a game for making a mean mug to a Detroit Pistons player, Bucks teammate Brooke Lopez.
Yeah, you know, we felt there were a lot of questionable calls, but you got to fight through that. And the way Giannis got kicked out, we obviously don't think that was great, you know, or correct. But whatever, we turned it into a positive.
The next night, Giannis put up 54 points in Indy against the Pacers. Head coach Adrian Griffin on what it's like to work with Giannis up close.
You know, it's just awesome to see someone with his length, his size, his footwork, you know, unbelievable footwork. You know, he's all-time great. He's going to go down as one of the greatest players to ever play this game.
That's the Bucks head coach, Adrian Griffin. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Clear skies tonight with a low of 34. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies tomorrow, 57. Tomorrow night, lows around 31. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 54 degrees.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
She did a lot of praying.
Right. And you knew that's that helped.
Yeah. Oh, you bet.
Yep. Yep. You got a lot of family support.
I figure she had a lot to do with stopping the disease from going to my brain.
Oh, yeah. John, is there a connection between being in the military and getting Guillain-Barré?
Yes, maybe. Guillain-Barré is an autoimmune-driven disease. It's still here. It's a virus. Compromised immune systems. So you can compromise your immune system by getting a flu shot or getting a swine flu. Remember swine flu? There was an outbreak of Guillain-Barré from the people who took the swine flu vaccines. I'm medically not supposed to get a flu shot because of the composition of the flu vaccine. But when the COVID vaccines came out, the doctors told me, I was pretty concerned about it, the doctors told me there was no indication that it was and I was still apprehensive, and a doctor friend of mine out in Arizona said, if you get COVID, it's going to be a lot worse. And so she said,
take it,
don't worry. And I've all had four shots, so I had COVID once, fairly mild issue.
So tell us a little bit. I have to comment a little about my, I tell people I'm married up. Marrying into the Bird family has been a wonderful thing and a gift. And the more I got to know all of you and the cousins and the nieces and the nephews and everything, it's just a wonderful family with a very unique story. So tell us about what we're all doing now is using the VA. And John, you've been at that a long time. There's a perception out there that the VA isn't as good as the private sector, right? We all thought that until we started using it. You don't, what? Oh, it's not. No. So tell us about that. But there is a perception sometimes that it's not as good. Have any of you ever heard that? That the VA is not as good? Yeah, so tell us.
I think they have extremely competent people. A lot of times the problem in the medical profession these days is to get all the medical professions are having trouble getting new doctors, getting new professionals.
They're shorthanded in Wisconsin.
Shorthanded all across the board. And
they're starting to, I'm in the puke zone, I call it, in halfway between Milwaukee and Green Bay and Appleton. And they're letting me go to the local doctor now. So.
And they pay for it, right?
They pay for it.
It's called, there's a name for it.
Community care.
Community care, care, right.
Yeah.
And Phil, do you want to talk about your experience with the VA?
Overall, it's pretty good. There's too many young people now. A lot of the people retired, the good people, that's their problem. They're bringing in young guys, and they aren't experienced enough. You got a lot of residents and fellows, and sometimes you don't even get to talk to the doctor.
Yeah,
and that's kind of aggravating.
John's uses a wheelchair now. You didn't always, right? When you got out, you were pretty mobile for a lot of years.
I was on crutches, yeah.
Crutches, and you were getting around, okay. And Phil, what our listeners might not know is that you're using a wheelchair now, and tell the listeners a little bit about how that happened, and you describe it better than I do.
I was working, I owned an insulation company in Oshkosh, and I was working on this house, and there was no guardrail around the staircase opening. They didn't have the stairs in yet, and they didn't have a guardrail around it. And I just come down from working way up in the ceiling, a very hot day, and I don't know what happened. I just stepped in the opening, and it was aligned with the opening on the first floor, so I went through that opening into the basement. I ended up, I must have hit my back on the edge of the opening for the first floor, and that's what took out my spinal cord. So I woke up and I'm on the floor in the basement. I tried to get up and big trouble.
How long after Vietnam was that? And is there a connection?
Well, there could be. Very likely the PTSD might have had an effect on that. We don't know for sure.
I can tell you were having trouble sleeping, and yeah. That's a big impact of Vietnam. But it was how many years?
That happened in 1990, so I've been in a chair 32 years.
I've heard you describe it like this. I made it through Vietnam, and then I come home and I'm paralyzed on a construction site. However, that is when we started really diving into the VA and needing the VA. And there are challenges, but it is like a family on the spinal cord wing. They have a brand new spinal cord wing here. So that we got involved in, but when Phil and I moved here, tell them about Tampa at one point.
Well, I went to a pain clinic in Tampa for 2 weeks. And
the Tampa VA.
The Tampa VA.
That's in Florida.
In Florida.
Okay. And that's a very nice facility. And they made you go from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, always doing something. You played bingo every night for an hour and a half. But there was swimming. You got in the pool every day. You had exercise class. It really took your mind off your pain, just being that active.
So it was 3 weeks. Inpatient.
Was it two or three?
3 weeks.
Three weeks.
And we were living in Alabama. and I decided to come and visit you. That's the part I want to get to. I didn't have a hotel room reserved. I just drove on down there, right?
Yeah, and we were trying to figure out where she could stay, because one time in Augusta, I was in having an annual checkup at the Augusta VA, and Luann checked in a hotel, and they told her, whatever you do, don't open your door at night to anybody. So, boom, she got out of there. So that was a concern about where are you going to stay. So we just happened to meet a social worker that day in Tampa. And they turns out they have a Fisher House right on campus there at the VA. So we were able to stay in this Fisher House, and it's like a 4 or 5 star hotel. It's completely accessible. There's one in Milwaukee also. They've been in the process of building one in Madison.
There's over 90 Fisher Houses in the U.S.
And a couple.
For you novices, it's like a Ronald McDonald House, but it's for veterans. They're all on VA grounds.
Right on the grounds.
Right on the grounds. And the only government contribution to Fisher Houses is the land on the VA grounds. All the other is all volunteer, the management and everything. It's probably one of the highest rating tax-exempt organizations that you can give money to, either the Fisher House Foundation or the individual Fisher Houses.
So when we moved here, Phil and I, there was not a Fisher House at the Milwaukee VA, which was about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I guess. And we saw that they were holding a fundraiser at the it was through the Miller Park Foundation, and it was the world famous 5K sausage races. And it would it involved both two things we love. One is the Brewers, and the second one is it was raising money to build a Fisher House, right, Phil?
Yeah, right.
So we got involved in that, right? And we've done it every year since we moved here. Do you want to talk about that? Tell them. Pretty cool.
I think we've been doing the sausage race for 13 years now, consecutively. And we get the whole family involved. Brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews. I think one year we had 30 people on our team. Birds for Fisher House. It was it was quite a nice thing.
Plus, you know, we really knew when Phil was paralyzed and I was living in, we were living in Oshkosh, and we had two young kids. It was really difficult driving down and trying to manage, not just when he was paralyzed, but complications come up. So, hey, honey.
Nephew Eli's father is a Navy veteran, worked on oilers off the coast of Vietnam. He's had prostate cancer. So he was at one of the races, which was really nice bringing him in.
Just a personal opinion, but I don't think they're paying enough at the VA to get good help anymore.
Right.
Yep. It could be. Yep.
They could raise up those salaries.
Yep.
That's for
my,
sure.
My primary care physician is Puerto Rican. She's competent medical. But I don't have a clue of what she's getting paid. But
there are needs. Veterans have needs, and we aren't getting all of them met through the VA. So, John, I know you have.
Yeah, I've gone to communities.
Extensively lobbied.
One of the things was I've been losing ground for quite a while.
Becoming less mobile.
I can't grow muscle. The disease has sort of destroyed my nerve sheaths. They sent me to about 3 years ago, they sent me to a high-tech neurology workup. But that was that was outside the VA, and so it was. So I mean that's one way the VA is compensating for their lack of
right
of service providers.
So then John's bugging me about 2 years ago, wasn't it? He says, "Lou, you got to apply for this caregiver program because I do take care of Phil, and you know more so now than I used to." So John is like, "You got to apply for this. You got to apply for this." So it kind of sometimes it takes that network to figure these things out. It doesn't always come, especially a new program, doesn't always come directly through the VA. So I was able to apply for caregiver support, which I could have used for years. I'm just saying. But it's great that they're advancing to that level and finding out what it is the veterans need. And in order to serve the veterans, you take care of the family. I mean, for years, I didn't work because I wanted to take care of him, and I didn't have insurance. Then I had to pay for my own. Under this caregiver program, I believe there is an element of coverage that the families can now get, which is great. When you talk about complications, plus I will mention my husband, Phil, was just in. Had some complications here at the VA the last couple of weeks. I met a guy up there who's he's a Iraq veteran. He was in 2007, and he's got ALS. Well, they can't find a bed for him anywhere because he's on a vent. So there are challenges out there that we still need to pay attention to and keep working on and contacting our legislators to let them know. Because this podcast series is all about action. It's all about hope and civility, and how can we do? You guys fought for our country, and I know I've been disappointed in the direction some of the political rhetoric has taken in the last 5 or 10 years. So you know, in this idea of patriotism, do you guys want to comment on that? You served. What do you think of all of that that's going on? Go ahead, Bill.
I'm not the man to talk about political stuff.
But I remember when the Iraq War started and you were sitting there with a friend of ours, Dan the Man, who had been in Vietnam with you. And tell us how that affected you. Do you remember that?
Well, they had the 24/7 coverage of the Iraq War. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it for a while. And it just, I got really, I don't know, hyper about it, and I just shut down. I don't watch any of that stuff anymore. I don't watch the news. I don't watch hardly ever watch network TV because of that. Because I don't need to hear all that stuff that's going on in the world.
That's called PTSD.
Well, I turned the TV off about 5 years ago. I don't watch any. I don't watch any network news at all. Period. About the only thing my wife and I share watching, we watch PBS a little bit. But I don't watch the news on PBS. I don't even watch the BBC news, which is supposed to be pretty good, but I don't watch any of that. I just.
How about you, Joe?
I don't watch any war movies. I can't watch it. Other than that, I'm TV literate.
You watch a lot of golf, I know that. Okay,
yeah.
So what you experienced stays with you forever, doesn't it? It stays with you forever. It never really goes away. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about going to the VA are those conversations, right, Phil, that you have with other veterans.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, today I was at a picnic with, I was at UWM. I was enrolled at UWM. It does not imply that I was a student. this is early 60s. And we have a group. We had a UWM Vets Club, and we have a picnic every year. I was at that this morning, this noon. And met a roommate of mine, you know, that I hadn't seen for maybe 2 years. But we're all late 70s, 80s, old farts talking about, and we, you know, pretty much there was a lot of beer drinking in the 60s. In Milwaukee, that's what you did. That's what Milwaukee's all about.
When you guys were in Vietnam, what was it like when you came home? What did you personally experience?
People asked me where I was. I didn't really get any bad treatment.
Oh, that's good.
No.
Okay.
I was surprised that people didn't know I was gone. My friends did. But
did you feel welcomed home now? Do you feel it now?
No. No, I don't partake.
Okay.
In veterans' welcome.
Okay. How about you, Phil?
Well, when I was in college at Oshkosh,
this is a story.
We had a vets club, and talk about a crazy bunch. But it was actually a support group. We did our own counseling, so to speak. I think we made some lasting friendships out of it. So it was good. Just had somebody to talk to, befriend to. It meant a lot.
Yeah. And you, go ahead, John. And you, I noticed that every time we go to the VA, like, you were getting transported, and here the guy, he was from Vietnam too, right? And he's volunteering his time, that guy. And you two start talking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Happens every time we go to the VA.
You always meet somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. There's important work there. Well,
I was in the Oshkosh Vets Club also, because when I withdrew from UWM, I withdrew while failing. You know, I still have the report cards, four of them. You know.
We drew well. You guys did okay in life, though. You've made it through.
Let's give it for our guys.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed listening to Bird on the Wire on Civic Media. For more episodes, visit us at civicmedia.us. I'm Lou Ann Bird. Thanks for listening.
This and more uninterrupted, listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Did you know there are some secrets behind the long-running popular Trans-Siberian Orchestra concert?
Organized chaos.
That's my favorite kind of show.
It's the best show ever.
Al Petrelli is the music director, guitarist, and an original member of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. TSO kicks off its winter tour in Green Bay November 15th.
That not only is there two shows in Green Bay on November the 15th, there's a show in Council Bluffs, Iowa on the 15th.
But that's not all. In 46 days, TSO has 104 shows.
This thing grew up. It opened its eyes 28 years ago. It has grown up and broken every rule.
Breaking rules by taking two TSO bands on the road to perform in two cities almost every night. The tour ends in Milwaukee, 62 cities after Green Bay. One other secret, every stop includes a portion of the ticket sales